This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Good to see you back. And Mitzvah Hashem for another year of good learning, I hope. As I mentioned last time, we obviously won't have a Shir Motzei Yom Kippur, but all the other Motzei Shabbos is over the coming festive period, we shall have Shirim as normal. In today's Sedra HaZinu, chapter 32, verse 4 and 5, we have a strange combination of adjectives. Taking verse 5 first, where he's talking about the disappointment of Am Yisrael in the future. This is all Nevuah, this is all prophecy going on the future. He refers to one of the future generations as Dor Ikesh Ufetal Tov, a generation which is Ikesh and Fetal Tov. The Mephoshim have a lot of difficulty with these two words. If I were to translate them literally, I would say stubborn and crooked. But really, stubborn and crooked are contradictory terms. If you're stubborn, then the one thing that you are is you're not crooked, you're not inconsistent. And if you're inconsistent, then you're not stubborn. So Rashi says that Ikesh is also a form of crookedness. It's Ikesh or Fetal Tol, there are two types of crookedness. The Ibn Ezra says the opposite. He says Petal Tol is a kind of akshonus, is a kind of stubbornness. And therefore Ikesh and Petal Tol means doubly stubborn. Both Perushim are a little bit difficult, and what I want to look at is whether we can't possibly translate it literally. As difficult as it sounds, can't we perhaps say a stubborn and inconsistent, crooked generation? Equally difficult and similarly difficult, in the previous pasuk, in verse 4, talking about the Ribbono Shel Olam, we say Kel Emunah V'Ein Ovel, he's a trusted God with no wrong comes from him. Tzadik V'Yoshor Hu, he's a tzadik, he's righteous and he's straight. It's also a very strange thing to say, he's righteous and straight. Can you be righteous and crooked? If you're righteous, obviously you're straight. Nevertheless, it says Tzadik V'Yoshor Hu, he's righteous and he's straight. Here again, Rashi goes out of his way to say this, these aren't adjectives talking about the Ribbono Shel Olam, this is talking about the way the people relate to God and so on. Because Rashi is obviously troubled by the very point we're asking. But the Unkelus, the Targum, doesn't translate it Rashi's way, and he says quite clearly that nothing bad comes out from Hashem, Dezakai v'kashit hu, because he is righteous and straight. So clearly Targum Unkelus translates it as adjectives describing God himself, describing the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he says, the Torah says, Moshe says, God is both tzaddik and he's yoshar. He's both righteous and he's straight. Which leads us again to a difficult deduction, and that is that it is possible to be righteous and crooked. And that's what we're going to examine this evening. What is straightness? The opposite of crookedness. When we talk about a door who is petal tol, a door who is crooked, and when describing the Ribbono Shel Olam, we talk about the Ribbono Shel Olam who is yoshar. What do we mean by yoshar, by being straight? It's a mido, it's a characteristic. And what does it mean? There's a chiyuv, one has to be straight. What does it mean to be straight? If we go back to Devarim chapter 6 verse 18 in Va'eschana, we're given a commandment, there's a tzivui. Ve'osiso ha'yoshor v'hatoiv be'enei Hashem, and you shall do that which is straight and good in the eyes of God. Somebody asked me a very good question last week, and that is, the Torah goes into so many details about so many mitzvahs, and repeats many mitzvahs several times. Notice that it doesn't repeat, it gives in precise detail. You must build a parapet around your house. Why doesn't it just say you must see that there's no, that your house is safe from any pitfalls? Clearly a marker you've got to make for yourself, and so on. All the mitzvahs are given in specific detail. When it comes to the mitzvah of being a mensch, you've got to look pretty hard to find any reference of it to it at all in the Torah. Where does it say, thou shalt be a mensch? And when you do find it, such as the Pasuk I've just quoted to you, it's in very general terms. You shall do that which is straight and that which is good in the eyes of God. We'll answer that question, but meanwhile, let's look at examples of Vasisu HaYosho V'Hatov. There are two examples given in the Gemara. One is given in Bava Metzia, Daftis Zayin Amud Beis, 16b. The Gemara there says that even though you might have taken possession of a piece of ground because a debtor was unable to fulfill his debt, in other words, the din is that automatically in Torah law, if you borrow money and there's a shtar, as there should be, there's a written document, as there should be, then automatically your property becomes bonded to your creditor. And even if you sell that property subsequent to taking out the loan, if you're unable to pay, the creditor is entitled to take the ground up to the value of the loan which you're unable to pay. Says the Gemara, strictly speaking, if you take ground because your debtor is unable to pay, and a while later he gets the money together and he comes back and he says, can I have my piece of ground back? Strictly speaking, you don't have to give it back. You've taken it, it's yours. He keeps his money, you keep the ground. Nevertheless, says the Gemara in Bava Metzia, afilu hachi mishum va'asisu ayosho va'atoiv omu rabonin detehada. Because of the mitzvah of va'asisu ayosho va'atoiv, because of this mitzvah we've just learnt now that you've got to do that which is straight and that which is good, you have to return the land. In other words, as far as the real basic dinim of chosh and mishpat are concerned, you don't have to return the land. But there's a general overriding principle of doing that which is good and that which is straight, and in the light of that principle you do have to return the ground, says the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Another example is in the Gemara, and also in Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Chesam with Aleph, 108a, where the Gemara says, if two partners or two brothers have two pieces of property, and there's a third piece of property in between theirs, and that third piece of property goes onto the market, and you go and you outbid it, and you outbid them, they want to buy it, and you pay a little bit more, or whatever other method you use, you get the rights to that property. The din is, again, according to the laws of Chosh and Mishpat, there's nothing that the two brothers can do about it, there's nothing that the two partners can do about it. There's a stranger in between them, and that's sad luck. Nevertheless, says the Gemara, because of Asita, Hayosho, V'Hatov, because of this chiyuv of doing that which is straight and good in the eyes of the Ribono Shel Olam, you can force the man in the middle to sell the property to the two partners. Yeah, that's what the Gemara says. Why? Says Rashi. Ma'asiso Hayosho, V'Hatov, Rashi is now going to define for us what this means. Dovo Shi'i Ato Nechsar Kol Kach. In a situation where you don't lose terribly much, because you bought an acre of land, there are other places where you can buy an acre of land. It doesn't have to be that acre. Rather go and buy elsewhere than put the two partners or the two brothers to the trouble of having separate properties all over the town. So you don't lose terribly much, they gain a tremendous amount. So it is Be'asiso Atova Hayosher, it's the correct thing to do, to sell that property out to the partners. Quite contrary to modern business practice, where one of the favorite tactics is to get yourself a piece of property between the two big boys, and then to negotiate the best deal you can. But in Torah, that's not correct. It falls into the category of Be'asiso Hayosher V'Atov, you're expected to sell out to the two parties. What do we see here? That the principle of Asiso Hayosho V'Hatov, the principle of doing that which is straight and that which is good, is really a principle of Lifnim Mishurat Hadin, doing more than is actually required of you by Halacha. Now we've got to be a little bit careful here, because since this mitzvah is included, it is required of us by Halacha. So Lifnim Mishurat Hadin is not more than is required. Now Lifnim Mishurat Hadin is required by us by Halacha, but we'll come to that in a moment. Without this din of Asiso Hayosho V'Hatov, certain laws would apply, and it would not be necessary in the two examples we've given, in the example of having taken a piece of property which was bonded to you, or in the case of owning a piece of property between two partners, it would not be necessary to give the property back. However, because of Asiso Hayosho V'Hatov, which is a chiyuv of Lifnim Mishurat Hadin to do more than is actually required of you, it becomes necessary to give it back. What does yosher become now? If we're now going to define the term yosher, Yashur now equates to doing more than is required of you. And this is very strange. One would think that being straight means doing that which is right. If you want to do more than that, that's more than being straight. But here we see no. Doing that which is right is one thing. But being straight is going even further than that which is right. And that's very difficult to understand. That means you can keep all the dinim correctly and you're still not being straight. Because straight is lifni mishuras hadin. You're straight only when you go beyond the shuras hadin, when you do more than is actually expected of you. That's when you're being straight. And we're going to have to explain that. It's very difficult to understand on the surface. But one thing we do see, it is possible to be a tzaddik and not to be yashur. You do have to qualify a tzaddik. To talk about a person as a tzaddik doesn't mean that he's a yashur. To say that he's righteous doesn't mean that he's straight. If he's righteous, it means he keeps the halacha. But straight requires that you go beyond keeping the halacha. We'll see in a moment what it really requires. And it's possible to be a dor ikesh ufetaltu. You can be stubborn in your observance of halacha and still be crooked. A funny kind of creature we're developing here. But let's look a little bit further and try understand what this concept of yashrus is, of being straight as being equivalent to lifnei mishuras hadin. A straight line is defined as the shortest distance between two points. But lemaisa, in fact, in reality, that's only a theoretical concept. Because in reality, if you take a point here and you take a point here and you join them together, that is not the shortest distance. Because of the curvature of the earth, that's in fact a semicircle. Let me give you a simple example. It took the airways a little bit of time to figure out that the shortest way of flying from Tokyo to London is not by drawing a straight line on a map from Tokyo to London, it's by drawing a curved line on a map. Because they worked out that going over the pole is a shorter semicircle than going around the long way. Not very much chokhmah. But it happens sometimes that what looks straight is not straight. And what is straight doesn't look straight. What I'm saying really is that if the world was flat as it looks on a map, then yes, a straight line would be the shortest distance between two points. But the world is imperfect. If we're going to define perfection as flat, because that's the only way that you could fulfill the mathematical definition of a straight line, then we've got to say that the world is mathematically imperfect. It's a sphere, it's not a flat piece of area. And consequently, your whole definition is incorrect. So your definition might be correct mathematically and theoretically, but when it comes to practically, a straight line is in fact a curve. There isn't such a thing as a straight line. Every straight line is curved. And there's a tremendous limud musar here for us. There's a tremendous ethical teaching for us in the simple mathematical concept. And that is that you only have straight lines in theory. When it comes to practice, you have to bend a line in order to make it straight. If you're going to try and keep it straight, it's not going to work. And here we come to the very difficult area of accommodation. Of the necessity to take principles which are unadulterated. I'm not talking about adulteration. And this is what we have to differentiate between in this shir. The differentiation between adulterating a principle and accommodating reality in a principle. And when Rashi says, really according to the din, you don't have to move out. But asiso ayoshev atoiv means that when it doesn't cost you very much, it does cost you something, mind you, doesn't cost you kol kach, it doesn't cost you all that much, and it's a tremendous advantage to the other party, then vasiso atoiv ayoshev atoiv requires that you go beyond what you thought was straight. Because that's not the straight line. The straight line here is to make a little bit of a curve and to understand that because of circumstances, straightness is not adhering strictly to the Shulchan Aruch. Straightness is going a little bit beyond the requirements of the Shulchan Aruch. Then you'll come out with a straight line. In other words, we've had to bend the Shulchan Aruch further out in order to come out with a decision which is truly straight. Straight meaning that when you look at it ultimately in a perspective, in its area, when you look at it in its environment, it looks straight. What I'm saying is that straightness is relative, straightness is not absolute. We have certain principles which are absolute. But when we talk about yashrus, about being straight, that's relative. You can't lay that down in a Shulchan Aruch, that this constitutes straightness and this constitutes straightness, because what constitutes straightness is always different in every situation. If you're steering a yacht or an aeroplane or even a motor car, you can't tell the person, look, if you hold the steering wheel exactly like that, you'll go straight. You're constantly having to correct. as the wind hits you on this side, you have to turn a bit this side, and a stone hits you this way, you have to correct a bit that way. In order to stay straight, you're constantly turning backwards and forwards. Is that called going straight? Yes, it is called going straight. Because in an imperfect world, if your motor car was designed perfectly, and you were riding on a perfect surface, you could hold your steering wheel absolutely still and you would go straight. That's if the world was perfect, but the world is not perfect. There's stones and there are winds and there are all sorts of other influences. And the only way you can drive straightly is by, in fact, continuously correcting yourself, left and right, to try and steer a straight course. And that's Yosha. Yosha is taking your unadulterated principles and steering a straight course through life with them. And that's not so easy, because a straight line, unlike its appearance, is not the shortest distance between two points. And that's really the answer to the question that this person asked me a couple of weeks ago. The reason that the Torah doesn't go into any detail about Yashrus is because you can't go into any detail. Situations are different all the time. And you constantly need to adjust, depending on the circumstance in which you find yourself. For example, let's say that the two owners of the property, on both sides of the property which you have just purchased, let's say those two owners are known anti-Semites who've been trying to squeeze you out of business for years, and you've just been able to eke out a living until this time, you've finally been able to buy the property between them, and now you're going to squeeze them to get whatever you can out of them. That's Yosha to do that. That's the straight thing to do. You can't come along and lay down a principle and say whenever you've got a property between two partners, you've got to sell it out to the partners or you've got to offer it out to the partners. That you can't do. It depends who the partners are. It depends under what circumstances you came to that property. It depends on the whole story, on the whole situation. And that's why the Torah just gives us a general principle of Vasiso HaYosha V'Atoy. Drive straight. And that means always correcting yourself. And the Meforshim point out that Yashrus, what is straight for one person, is not necessarily straight for another person. Everybody is different. Everybody has to judge his level of straightness differently, and every circumstance is different. The greater a human being, the more finely tuned will his sense of straightness be. And straightness is an intuitive sense that cannot be acquired externally. You can't look up in a book and find out what's straight. And you can't phone somebody up on the other end of the world and ask them a shaila and ask them what's straight. It's got to be a situation where the person who's answering your shaila is intimately aware with every detail of the problem and every facet of the circumstance before he can pass an opinion as to whether it's straight or not. And if you yourself want to have a feeling of straightness, and it's essential to have that, you can't drive a car blindfolded and say to the person sitting behind you, tell me every time I've got to correct a few millimeters either way. It doesn't work. You've got to have a natural sense of driving straight, and if you haven't got that, you can't drive. And so it is with Torah. You need to develop a natural sense of driving straight. And it's so hard. This is the area of difficulty in Shmiras Halacha. To keep Shabbos and to keep Kashrus and to keep everything is relatively easy. To keep it all and to drive straight, that's so hard. And we'll see in a few moments why it's hard and what to do about it. Now we can now understand in the light of this a Mishnah in the beginning of the second chapter of Pirkei Avos. Rebbe Yomer, says Rebbe, Eizohi derech yashara sheyava loy ha'adam. What is a straight path? What have we got to guide us? We can't use a compass. What can you use? If you're flying an aeroplane, there's certain instruments you can use to help you drive straight. Driving a car, there's an intuitive sense of what is straight. But what do you do if you have to figure out what's straight in terms of day-to-day living? How do you choose straightness? How do you fix a course? How do you steer a straight course when it comes to life? Now we understand Rebbe's question. Because quite apart from all the halachas of the Torah, one of the most important halachas of all is Va'asiso HaYosho V'HaToyv. You've got to do that which is straight. And straightness, we've said, is relative. It's not something which somebody else can tell you how to do. Ask Rebbe, so where do we turn for help? So Rebbe gives us a key. He gives us our compass. Kol shehi tiferes lo'oseha, v'tiferes lo'i min ha'adam. Anything which God takes pride in, and humanity takes pride in. That's it. That means that what I do has to be correct in terms of halacha, and people must like it too. Now this is already in direct contradiction to what we learned in the Shabbos Shuvah Shir, where we talked about taking one's norms from the Torah and not from society. And here we're saying no. If you want to drive straight, a straight course is doing, is checking all the time that what you're doing is both acceptable to God and people accept it too. But if people say you're a bit meshuggah and they think you've gone crazy, then you've got to know you're not steering straight. That's what it says. We have to understand it still. And it doesn't say that if eres loy min ha-yehudim, the Jews must like it. And it doesn't say that if eres loy min ha-tzadikim, the tzadikim must like it. It says ha-odom, the man in the street. What you're doing must be something in which you can take pride in front of humanity, and you can take pride in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is very difficult to understand. I just want to point out one other aspect closely tied to this, and that is the reason for which the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. There are two views given in the Gemara. One view is given in Yuma, Daf Tes, page 9, and one is given in Bava Metzia, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, 30b. In Bava Metzia, the Gemara says the following: Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Loi Chorvo Yerushalayim, Elo Al Shedonu Bo Din Torah. The reason that Jerusalem was destroyed is because they made their decisions 100% correct according to Halacha. It's a funny thing to say. That sounds like a very frumtan Yerushalayim. What did they do wrong? 100% according to Halacha, they didn't deviate. And that's why it was destroyed. Yes, that's why it was destroyed. Because there was no Lifni Mishuras Hadin. They were tzaddik without being Yosha. They were righteous without being Yosha. They were Ikesh, they were firm in their commitments to Torah principle, and they were fataltul as well. There was crookedness there as well. There was a lack of Yashrus. There was a lack of straightness. And the Gemara in Yuma Daf Tes says it was because of sinas chinom, because they hated one another unnecessarily. How is it possible that people who were learning Torah as they were at that time, people who were involved in Torah, how is it possible that they hated one another chinom without reason? The answer is they didn't think it was chinom. They thought there was good reason to hate one another. It was only the Torah who tells us that it was unnecessary hatred. Why did they think it was a good reason? It's the natural consequence where you don't have yashus, where you don't have the ability to accommodate, you don't have the ability to like or love anybody who holds differently from you. And you start calling them all sorts of names, and you start defining them in all sorts of derogatory ways, and you result with a sinat chinam, because they don't hold the way you hold. We'll come to that in a moment, but at this stage all I want to show you is, again, the principle that there is such a thing as being a tzaddik and not yosha, being righteous and yet not straight, and how dangerous it is that being a tzaddik and not yosher is something which the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't tolerate, and for which he was prepared to destroy Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash and everything. This conflict that I've just described to you, the conflict between steering a course in terms of what is right in terms of Shulchan Aruch, as we described earlier this afternoon, that we've got to understand what the Torah wants from us. We don't have to worry what other people hold and what other people believe and what other people want and what other people... It's irrelevant. All we have to understand is what Chazal say, what the Poskim say, what the Gemara says, what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from us, what the Gedolim of today tell us. That's all we need to know. That's it. And we follow. And yet we see that Rebbe is telling us here that you've got to accommodate yourself. You've got to take into account also the way people look at you. A similar conflict is found in the following two cases. The first is a remarkable story in Adios, Perek Hei Mishnah Vav, the fifth Perek, sixth Mishnah. Akiva ben Mahalalel Heid Arbo Dvorim. Akiva ben Mahalalel paskened a din, or rather declared that he was taught a certain halachas in four areas which was unpopular at his time. Nobody else accepted those areas. This is something terribly relevant for today, because again, I know I mentioned it in the Gemara Shir, and I mentioned it this afternoon, and I'm mentioning it again tonight, and Emir Tzashim many more times over the coming year. But there is an atmosphere in Yiddishkeit at the moment of religious terrorism, of somehow blackmailing and forcing people to adopt one's own attitudes and one's own shittas. And one had a similar situation there with Akiva ben Mahalalel. He came out with four concepts, four halachas, which he claimed he'd heard from his rabbi. Omrulay, his colleagues said to him, Akiva, Chazoy becho ba'arba dvorim shehayisayim. Withdraw those four things, the Na'asecho Av Beis Din Yisrael, and we will appoint you the Av Beis Din of the whole of Israel. We will appoint you the chief rabbi of the whole of Klal Yisrael, international chief rabbi of Israel, over everybody. If you'll only take back those four things, you're too controversial at the moment. We can't have you as the Av Beis Din if you hold still on these four things. But if you'll take back those four things, we'll appoint you an Av Beis Din. Amar Lahin, he said to them, only we would hear words like this today. Mutav li lihikore shoite kol yomai. I would rather be called an idiot all my life. The lo le asos shoa achas rosho lifnei hamokum. Rather than to be considered wicked by the Ribbono shel Olam for one moment. What's wicked about changing his mind on these four things, since everybody else agrees that he's wrong? He's the only one who holds like this on all the four things. Shelo yehu oimrim bishvil srora chazoba. I would be prepared to withdraw from them. But if you're going to appoint me chief rabbi afterwards, that disqualifies me from withdrawing. Because people are going to say you withdrew that, you changed your mind to get the office. For the appointment, you were prepared to change your principles. And that's, unfortunately, it's not even on the level of that, but that's the type of religious terrorism that goes on very often. Become one of us, hold like us, and you're part of the club. Not only that, we'll appoint you Av Beis Din L'chol Yisrael. We'll accept you. Akiva ben Mahalalel Nebuch was an outcast. He was a wonderful person. He was a godel be Israel. And a lot of what he said is recorded in Shas in various places, including in Pirkei Avos. But he wasn't accepted at all by his colleagues of the time. According to one version, he was even benidu. He was even put into... what do they call it?
Coventry.
They put him aside. But be that as may, whether they actually did that or they didn't, he was certainly somebody who was unpopular among his colleagues, and yet they realized his greatness, and if only they could get him to come round to their view, they would have appointed him Av Beis Din. And the Mefarshim explained that the argument developed from the fact that he said that's the way he learned from his rabbein, and the others said that's the way they learned from their rabbein. And he said his rabbein were in the majority, and they said their rabbein were in the majority. So there was a conflict. But he said, that not. To be called a Rosha for one moment, if I should do such a Chilul Hashem, to change my mind in order to accommodate myself to you, Chas v'sholem, that not. So here we see accommodation being thrown right out. Under no circumstances. I know I'm unpopular. I know as a result of that I can't hold office in Israel. As a result of that I can't fulfill my potential. I can't give of my talents, of all the talents that I've been given, that I could give, that I could utilize. All that I can't do because of these four principles that I'm stubborn about. But on principle, I will not accommodate myself to a popular view because I believe I'm right. The continuation of the story is interesting. In the Mishnah Zayin, we're told the following. Bish'as mitoso, till the day of his death, he wouldn't withdraw. When he died, Omar livnoi, he called his son to his bedside. And he said, Beni, my son, chazoy becho ba'arbo dvorim shayisi oimeh. You must withdraw from the four things which I said. Don't follow my line anymore. You go their way. So the son said to him, Father, if you've changed your mind, why don't you announce that you've changed your mind? No, I heard from a majority. I heard from my Rebbe, who was a majority of his at his time. And they claim they heard from a majority. So they have to follow their way, and I have to follow mine. Ani amadati bishmuasi. I remained with what I was taught. Vehem omdu bishmuason, and they remained with what they were taught. Avalatol shemata mipi hayachid mipi amarubin. But you have heard from all of them, and you've just heard from me. So as far as you are concerned, mutav laniach divrei hayachid. You should set aside my view, which is a single view in your case. Velechus bedivrei hamarubin, and you should follow the way of the marubin. That's a godel beYisrael. A man who says, look here, I hold by my way. But if you ask me the psak halacha, klal Yisrael, you have to follow them, because that's the popular way. But for me, I follow my way. Nevertheless, he says, mutav lahaniach, it's better for you to leave what I say. Why doesn't he say, Chayev ata lahaniach, you're obligated to leave what I say? So says the Rambam, because as far as the son is concerned, he's also heard it from a majority. The son heard it from his father, who was his Rebbe, and the father heard it from a majority. So as far as the son is concerned, his father is not a yochid. His father is not one. His father heard it from all that generation. And that's been passed down, and now there's another generation which holds differently. But as far as the son is concerned, halakhically he should have followed his father. But the father says, Mutter, now it's time to accommodate. I couldn't accommodate. For me it would have been wrong to accommodate them. For you there's a heter. You don't have to, but it's correct. It's better for you to accommodate them now that I'm dying. Then, not that it's got anything to do with our subject, but it's just nice to finish off the Mishnah. It's very beautiful. Amar lo Abba, he said to him, Father, at least instruct your colleagues to accept me back. Isn't it pathetic? He said, I'm going to be traitorous really to you, because I'm going to withdraw on the four things which you held all your life. I don't want it to be for nothing, and they still won't accept me. Then I would rather keep by the four things. He said, no, I will not pass such an instruction, says the father. Is there something wrong with me? Are you embarrassed about me that you don't want me accepted by them? Amar lo elav, he said, no. Ma'asecho yikrevucho, ma'asecho yarchikucho. Your actions will make you accepted by them, or your actions will make you rejected by them. What I say has got nothing to do with it. If you want to be accepted by them, you're going to have to do it yourself. And if you're going to be rejected by them, it's going to be because of your own actions. All I'm telling you is don't start off on the wrong foot. Start off by withdrawing what I held by. Mutav, it's better for you. So here again we see the conflict. Rabbi Akiva ben Mahalalel himself would not withdraw, but he instructs his son to withdraw. And one other chazal in this connection is the famous braisa it brought in Yuma Daf Peivov Amud Aleph 86a. V'ahavto es Hashem Elokecha. We're instructed you must love Hashem your God. What does it mean? That means that you should bring people to love God. How do you do it? By giving shiurim? By running around preaching? No. You should know your Chumash and your Mishnah and your Gemara. You should be a lamdan. And in addition to being a lamdan, your dealings with humanity, again, not your dealings with Jews, and not your dealings with from Jews. Your dealings with humanity should be benachas, should be with pleasantness. Mahabriyas oinreis alav. Then what do people say to you? Ashrei oviv shilimda Torah. This is a from man. Psst, fantastic. This is a Talmid Chochem. Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it a pleasure to be in his company? Ashrei raboi shilimda Torah. Isn't his Rebbe lucky? Can't his Rebbe take pride in him? To see that this is what he's produced. Then the Brisa goes on a little bit and it says, but you can have another kind of human being who's just as much a Talmid Chochem. He knows his Chumash inside out and he knows Mishnayos from beginning to end and his Mishamish Talmid Chochem, he's worked under Talmidei Chachomim and he's argued with them and fought with them and he knows Gemara inside out. He knows the whole of Shas from beginning to end. He knows Shulchan Aruch, he knows Rambam, he knows Yerushalmi, the lot he knows. The ein masor matone be'emuna, but he's not straight in his business dealings. The ein diburoi benachas im habrios, and when he speaks to people, it's not nice. He doesn't speak pleasantly. He doesn't say anything wrong. Not loshen hora chas v'sholom or anything like that. Not deceitful. It's just not nice. He doesn't speak pleasantly. Ma habrios oimreis olav. What do people say about him? Oy lo liploine shalima Torah. Oy, what a pity that this person even learned Torah. He would have been better off without it. His poor father who taught him Torah, he must be so regretting it at the moment, and so on and so forth. Here again we see the necessity to accommodate the opinions of humanity. So what is going on? Where do we say, like Rabbi Akiva ben Mahalalel said, that's it, I don't care what people say. Mutav she'eyeh shoyte l'olam, I should rather be a stupid man in the eyes of humanity forever than to be a rosha in God's eyes for one moment. And when do we say that it's important to elicit the response of society to one's behavior and to adjust one's behavior according to that response? When I see that a person isn't taking well to me, to what extent do I have to adjust to fit into him? The answer is given by the Mesillas Yesharim. and I'm going to read and translate a little bit of Mesillas Yesharim to you. This is in the middle of chapter 20. You see from this, says the Mesillas Yesharim, that in matters of Chassidus, the Mesillas Yesharim is defining and describing Chassidus. You can't just look at the action and decide whether the action is right or wrong. But you have to look here and there, to all the sides. You've got to look to the circumstances. Every possible aspect and angle, sheyochel seichel ha'odom liros, every aspect of the circumstance which it is humanly possible to perceive, ad sheyodun be'emes, until you can judge in truth, eze yichshar yoseh, which will be more correct, ho asiyo or haprisha, doing it or abstaining from doing it. You can't take an action and say, this is good, so I'll go and do it. In every action, you've got to weigh up every aspect of the action, all its side effects, all its ramifications, as far as is humanly possible. Sheyochel seichel adam liros, as far as the intellect of a man can possibly conceive, and then to decide which will be better, to do it or not to do it. For example, the Torah commanded you, if you see somebody doing something wrong, it's correct to point it out to them. Very often it will happen that a man goes to tell a sinner off in a place or in a circumstance where his words are not going to be accepted, and he causes them to persist even more in their wickedness and to curse the Ribbono Shel Olam and to continue sinning, because it doesn't come over nicely. And you rebuke them in a way which has made the sinner feel even more distant, and he's saying, hey, if that's what they like, the frum guys, so holy, I don't want anything to do with them. In any case, in such a case, chassidus is to keep quiet. Not to say, okay, but the Torah says you must, but there's a time to do it, and there's a time not to do it. Here we have the problem already defined. Although there's a halacha that you must tell a person off if he's doing wrong, says the Mesillas Yesharim, there are times when you dare not. There are times when you actually have to keep quiet. As it says in Gemara Yevamos, that is, just as it is a mitzvah to say something which will be heard and accepted, so it is a mitzvah not to say something which won't be accepted. For example, this is exactly this case which we talked about this morning after the davening. It's clear that every man should want to run forward to be the first to do a mitzvah, and to be one of the people involved in the mitzvah. There's a mitzvah which can only be done by a few people. Clearly everybody should try and be one of the people to do it. But sometimes, as a result of this effort, an argument can result, in which case the mitzvah will be disgraced more than it will be praised. In such a case, certainly a chosid should stand off and say, let somebody else do it. It's exactly the case we talked about this morning. Although there's a din that you've got to run after mitzvahs, if by running after a mitzvah you're going to cause a chilul Hashem, then you don't run after the mitzvah, you stand back. Now the Mesillas Yesharim defines the principle. A man therefore has to keep all the mitzvahs with all their details in front of whoever it is. It makes no difference. As David HaMelech said, David is a king who moved in international circles. I discuss your mitzvahs, O God, in the presence of kings, and I'm not embarrassed. And as it says, you must be as single-minded as a leopard to do that which the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to do. But here there's got to be distinctions. In all matters where principles of the mitzvahs are involved, things where there's a clear obligation, there you've got to do it no matter what other people will say. But there are many aspects of mitzvahs which are little extra things. That's yashrus. Lifnei mishurat hadin. To go beyond the halacha. If you want to do them in front of people and they're going to laugh at you, it comes out that you've sinned, you've done no great mitzvah. Because it wasn't absolutely obligatory that you had to do it, and would it have been more correct not to do it at all? And that's what it means when Michal says, you should be modest with the way you go about your mitzvahs. That means in the mitzvahs themselves, those things that you've got to do, you've got to do. But you don't have to do them in a way or in a place or add to them in circumstances that are going to cause difficulties. And many Hasidim didn't display their Hasidus when they were in public because of mechzi ki yuhara, because of looking arrogant, just things being a little bit above one's level. I've told you, I think, several times that in yeshivas in Lithuania, it was unheard of that an unmarried boy would grow a beard, and it was equally unheard of that he would wear his tzitzis out. This was no question, that wasn't done. Why not? Mechzi ki yuhara. It's not one of the essential mitzvahs. There's no halacha that you must have a beard. There's no halacha that you must wear your tzitzis out. It's midas chasidus, it's a nice thing to do. But not where there's a chashash of yuhara, where by doing that people might think that you're trying to present yourself on a higher level than you really are. That's not allowed to be done at all. Klamosh Yodova, the rule is, kol mashehu ikoriba mitzvah, anything which is principal in the mitzvah, ya'aseyu lifnei kol malik, you should do that in front of anybody who even mocks you. Umashe eino ikori, and something which is not a principle in the mitzvah, v'hu goyrem schoik v'hitul, and it causes people to laugh, or to take it lightly, or to think that you're arrogant, lo ya'aseyu, that must not be done. And here we have the principle of Yashrus developed. Says Rebbe in the second chapter of Pirkei Avos, in matters of halacha, it's clear, I follow the Shulchan Aruch. But now when it comes to Yashrus, Yashrus means doing a little bit more than the Shulchan Aruch requires of us. Yashrus means going a little bit ahead. It means understanding the principles and extending the principles further. That's what it means to be straight. How do I know what's really straight? Says Rebbe, a simple test. A, the Ribbono Shel Olam must like it. That's fairly easy to work out. When you've understood a halacha, when you've understood what the Torah wants from you, you can figure out how God would like you to extend that further. But secondly, it's also got to be Tiferes Lo Min HaAdam. People must like the sound of it too. People must like the look of it as well. And that's where why Akiva ben Mahalalel on his own, for him to withdraw from his four principles, that would be a withdrawal in principle. That would be accommodating in a matter of principle that he can't do. But for his son, it's just a matter of kibud av. He should respect his father, so he should carry along the same line as his father. But halakhically, his son is permitted to follow the majority. Says Akiva ben Mahalalel, once you're permitted to follow the majority, except because of hidur, because of lifnim mishuras hadin, you would like to do me the honor of continuing in my unpopular way. Says Akiva ben Mahalalel to his son, that's not yashrus, that's not straight. Since the ikar hadin, the main part of the halacha, allows you to accommodate them, if there's no point in holding by something which is going to make you unpopular and unacceptable in society. And therefore I instruct you to follow their ways. And that's why the Gemara in Yuma about making God's name loved is no contradiction to Akiva ben Mahalalel either. Because what is the Gemara talking about there? It's talking about your style. The way you speak. The way you walk. The way you do business. It's not talking about the halachas. Sure, both people, the first one who's described in that brisa and the second one, you'll remember both of them are Talmidei Chachomim. Both of them know everything. Both of them for sure are not doing anything halachically wrong. They're not talking Lashon Hora, they're not dishonest in their business. It's just not benachas. It's not with refinement. It's not with polish. It's not smooth. It's rough. It's grob. That's a chilul Hashem. When it comes to that, you have to take your cue from society. And therefore, if society says about you that you're wicked, why are you wicked? Because you keep Shabbos. It's old fashioned to keep Shabbos. You can ignore it. And if society says you're wicked because of kashrus, and you're breaking down our family life because you're trying to keep kosher and there's no way we can accommodate it, you can ignore that. But once it gets beyond the essential requirements of halacha, you can no longer ignore what people say about you. If people say, just look at him, look at the way he's dressed, he looks a schloch. If that's what Frum Yiddishkeit is about, I don't want any part of it. That you've got to worry about. Because that style, that lifnim mishurat. And in that area, it's essential to take your cue from humanity. Because they are the ones that can determine your level of normality. They can't determine your level of tzidkus, but they can determine whether you're normal, whether you're well adjusted to society or not. And the Torah requires that frum or not frum, Jew or Gentile, you've got to be well adjusted into society. And society is the judge of whether you're well adjusted or not. Not the Shulchan Aruch, and not yourself. From that you've got to take your cue from society. On matters of right and wrong, I repeat, on matters of right and wrong, on the Ikore Dinim of Shulchan Aruch, on the principles of Halacha, society has no say. There we go to the Shulchan Aruch, we look at what the Din requires. But on all the refinements of Yiddishkeit, the Lifni Mishuras HaDin, doing a little bit more than is really required, there society is the one that has to fix. Society is the one that has to decide. We have to dress in a way which society finds acceptable. If society doesn't find wearing a yarmulke acceptable, that's tough luck on society. Because it's a halacha, you've got to wear a yarmulke. But there's no halacha as to the style of dress that one takes. As long as one isn't in the forefront of new fashions, that isn't a good idea, to be in the forefront of new fashions. But to follow a fashion, to be well adjusted in society, in terms of when you walk down the street, people don't look around and say, what's that walking past? But you look like a normal mensch. That's what one has to do. The way one talks, the way one operates, the way one lives, all that, when it doesn't conflict with Shulchan Aruch, has to be in terms of the society in which one's living. In the times when there used to be a ghetto society, which was a wonderful society, by the way, don't for 1 minute think that we're better off today without the ghettos. There was a wonderful richness of Jewish living and of moral integrity and all sorts of fantastic things when we did have our ghetto living. When we had our ghetto living, the ghetto was the society. And you dressed according to the fashions of the ghetto, and you operated according to the fashions of the ghetto. But if you're not living in a ghetto society, if you're living in a society which mixes and rubs shoulders with non-religious and irreligious and anti-religious and non-Jews altogether, one's daily living has to be in accordance with the styles of the time in which one's living and the society in which one is living, only to the extent that they don't think that you're odd. If you look odd and there's no halachic reason for you to look odd, that one isn't allowed to do. And even the din of chukas ha-goy, that one isn't allowed to follow a goy. You know, one can take this, how far do you take this din of chukas ha-goy? You're not allowed to follow the goy. I always give the example. Are you allowed to breathe? The goyim breathe. We should all stop breathing. That's not what chukas ha-goy means. The goyim wear shoes, we mustn't wear shoes. That's not what chukas ha-goy means. Chukas ha-goy is clearly in matters of religion. We're not permitted to do anything which they do as part of their goyishkeit, as part of their religious and cultural system, we can't adopt. But if it's not an adoption as part of their cultural system, for example, to take off a hat when you walk into a building and not have a yarmulke underneath, that's chukas ha-goy. Because when they take off their hats, it's a whole cultural and religious demonstration. And therefore it would be chukas ha-goy, apart from everything else, to take off one's hat. For example, when the Jews used to wear long jackets, when everybody used to wear long jackets, the first Jews who started wearing short track jackets, possibly imitating the goyim, they could have been shilas of chukas ha-goy. Why do you have to be the first? But once it's accepted that that's how Jews walk as well, it's important at all times to be seen to be normal. And I must tell you that society is extremely tolerant. You'll be surprised at the degree of tolerance of society as long as you're a mensch. I've seen people walk through the town with long coats and long beards and hats, and I've seen them come into offices, and I've seen them being treated by goyim like kings. I've seen goyim stand up when they walk into the room. I've seen goyim go out of their way to do whatever I can for you. And I've seen people walk in the same circumstances with the goyim sniggering and laughing at each other. What's the difference? You don't have to imitate the goy to be accepted by him, but you do have to be a mensch. You do have to be a normal, well-adjusted human being who knows how to say good morning, and who knows how to say thank you, and who knows how to say please, and who knows how to look clean and presentable, and who knows how to fit into a situation when fitting in doesn't require compromising and adulteration of basic halachic principles. That's what one needs to know how to do. In conclusion, I just want to read for you the Pesicha, the introduction of the Ha'amek Dover to Sefer Bereishis. I've done a small part of this with you once before, but I'm going to read through the whole thing. It's not very long, but the whole shir will be summarized in the most remarkable way here. Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer HaYosha, the Sefer of Straightness. And the Hamek Dovad and the Tziv is discussing why it's called the Sefer of Straightness. And he brings Rabbi Yochanan and says, Zeh Sefer Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov shenikru Yeshorim. Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov were called Yeshorim by who? By Bilam. Isn't that interesting? Why is it called the Sefer HaYosher? Because it's a Sefer, it's a book about Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov were Yeshorim. Who gave them the title of Yeshorim? Bilam, who used to say, Thomas Nafshi Moshe Yeshorim. If only I could die a death like the Yeshorim, Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov died. Again we see that it's the Goyim, it's society in general, who determine Yashrus, straightness. They don't determine Halacha, but they determine straightness. The Yesh Lahovin Hata'am, and one should understand the reason, Lama Koro Bilam is Avasein B'Shem Yeshorim B'Yichud. Why did Bilam choose to call them Yeshorim? The Lord Tzadikim or Hasidim, why didn't he call them Tzadikim, Hasidim, other terms? Why did Bilam pick on the word Yeshorim? Straight people. And why is the Sefer Bereishis called Sefer HaYosher, not rather than Sefer HaTzedek or Sefer HaChasidus or something? And he quotes, the Hamid Dover quotes from our Posuk in Hazinu. Hatzu tomin po'eloi sodik ve'yosheru. Dishvach yosheru ne'mar lahatzik din HaKadosh Baruch Hu bechur ben ba'yishen ishayador ikeshu petaltu. Isn't this fantastic? Says the Hamid Dover, when we talk about God as being tzadik ve'yosher, we are justifying his harsh judgment of the generation of the second Beis HaMikdash, which he destroyed. Because they were dor ikeshu fetaltu, they were stubborn and crooked. So we see we're right, you can have stubbornness and crookedness. Ufirashman, we've explained, shayut tzaddikim v'chassidim v'amolei Torah. The people of the generation of the second Beis HaMikdash were tzaddikim. This wasn't speculation, we've now got this on the authority of the Netziv. They were tzaddikim, and they were chassidim, and they were amolei Torah, they toiled in Torah. They gave their lives for it. But they weren't straight in their day-to-day affairs. In their dealings with the world, they weren't straight. How is it possible to be a tzaddik, a chosid, an omal b'toira, and not to be yosha, not to be straight? Alkein mipnei sinat chinam shebelibam ze et ze. Because of the unfounded hatred that they had for one another, choshtu et mi sheroh shenoyeg sheloy kedatam beyiras Hashem, anybody who didn't follow their shittas in Yiras Hashem, doesn't this sound familiar? Shehu tzeduki v'apikoros, he's an apikoros. Anybody who doesn't follow the mainstream, which I determine, anything which is my stream is mainstream, anything which is to the right or the left is apikoros. Uvohu al yedei zeh lidei shvichus damim, and they came as a result of this to cause a loss of life. Ulechol haroah shebe'olam, and to all sorts of wicked things. Ad shechorav habayis, until the Ribbono Shel Olam destroyed the temple. As great as they were, as tzaddikim as they were, as chassidim as they were, as amolei Torah as they were, but they couldn't adjust, they couldn't accommodate to people who didn't hold the way they did. Val zeh hayah tzidduk hadin, and this is what we've justifying God's actions with. Shakurush Boruchu Yoshoru, God is straight. Ve'eino soyvel tzadikim ka'elu, and he cannot tolerate such tzadikim. Elo ba'ofin shehulchim b'derech ha'yosho gam ba'alichus oylom. He likes tzadikim who go straight also in their day-to-day dealings with the world. Ve'loi ba'akmimus, and not crookedly. Afal gav shu l'shem shamayim, even though that crookedness was l'shem shamayim, it was all in the interest of Torah that we were doing it. All the Lashon Hora we spoke about the people who don't hold by our line, and all the things that we did to say that they were apikursim and to have nothing to do with them, it was all the Shem Shemayim. Of course we were fighting a battle for God. Because this causes the destruction of the creation and the destruction of the settlement of the land. A society cannot live where people are unable to accommodate one another, even where they have halachic, quote unquote, justification for this lack of accommodation. And now he's going to explain what Yashrus is. V'zeh ha'yoshvach ha'avos, and this is what the avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, were so excellent at. Shemuvat shayu tzadikim v'chassidim v'oyavei Hashem ba'ofen ha'yoser efshar. Quite apart from them being tzadikim and chassidim and lovers of God to the extreme. Oid hayu yeshorim. On top of that, they were straight. And you see here that yeshorim is a higher level still. You can be a tzaddik and a chosid and still not be yosha. Haynu shehit nahagu im umas ha'olam afilo oivdei ililim mechuorim. That is, that they dealt with the non-Jews of the world, even idol worshippers. Mikol makum hayu imam ba'ahavo. They related to these wicked idol worshippers with love. V'choshu l'toivosom, and they cared for them. Ba'asher hi kiyum abriya, because that's in the interest of the creation. And here he's coming to his definition of yashrus. To want the world to continue. That's what yashrus is. I'm going to take you a little bit further to see it clearly. He then gives the examples of how Avraham Avinu prayed for Sodom to be saved. Why didn't he just pray for his brother to be saved? And he kept on saying, if you'll find 50 tzaddikim, will you save the town? And 40 tzaddikim, will you save the town? Why didn't he just say, will you save the tzaddikim? If you find 50 tzaddikim, will you save the tzaddikim? If you find one tzaddik, will you save the tzaddik? Why does Avraham want the city to be saved? Because Avraham can't tolerate to see destruction. That's it. He would rather hope that one day these wicked people in Sodom will come right. But to see them destroyed, that's something he can't tolerate. And so he talks about how Yitzchak dealt with Avimelech and how Yaakov dealt with Lavan. All the time there was tolerance and accommodation. And therefore Bereshis, which is the book of creation, it's in there that God created the world. That is aptly called the book of Yosha, the book that teaches people how to want the world to continue. And here comes the beautiful part. Uvilam bishat ruach hakodesh. And Bilam, that wicked, wicked Bilam, at the moment that he had ruach hakodesh, that he was imbued with the spirit of God, lo haya yochel litpalei al ruach ma'asav she'en tzadik bechosid kavrom Yitzchak v'Yaakov, acharei shu novi umas ha'olam v'roisho kimekorat tuma. He couldn't be upset at the fact that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were so righteous and he's so wicked, because he was so involved in all the wickedness that he couldn't even see the benefit of being righteous. So that wasn't something which was at all attractive to him. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov's righteousness was not attractive to Bilam. What he got upset about was, what a miserable man I am in terms of Derech Eretz. Just ordinary dealings with people. Says Bilam to himself, I'm justified to hate the Jewish people. Nothing wrong with that. I can hate them to the extreme. They're the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and they're on the highest levels of Kedusha, and I'm down in the base levels of Tumah. It's natural that I should hate them. I'm sure God isn't going to be upset at my hating them. He might be upset that I'm in the Tumah, but now that I'm in the Tumah, he's not going to be upset that I hate them. But to pray to God that a nation should be wiped out, even though it's a nation that I hate, that's not straight. V'eino derech yeshoro b'kiyum ha'olam. V'alze tzoak tomus nafshi mois yeshorim. And that's why he shouted out, oh, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, although you hated Sodom, and you hated the idol worshippers like Avimelech, and you hated Lavan, the crook, you hated the whole lot of them, but you never tried to destroy them. And you never prayed that they should be destroyed. And you never tried to wipe them out. You just tried to get on with them, to deal with them as best you can, to care for them, to pray that they'll be saved, to pray that they'll be helped ultimately, that they'll come to the true way. That's what Yeshur is. That's what Yeshur is. And I, Bilam, should at least have that Derech Eretz, that as much as I hate you Jewish people, to request God to wipe you out, that's not right. That's something I should never have done. And that's why the Sefer, which is the book of creation, is called the Sefer HaYosher. And here we have the whole story. Yes, one can be a tzaddik without being a Yosher. And unfortunately it's happened all too often, the most notable example being the generation of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, which was a generation, as the Netziv tells us, of tzaddikim, chassidim, va'amolei b'Torah. They were people on the highest level of religious observance and religious endeavor. But they weren't Yeshorim. In what sense? In the sense that they were unable to accommodate society in matters that were beyond strict halachic decision. If they were all Amolei B'Torah, you can be quite sure that among them there weren't Apikursim. You can be quite sure that among them there weren't Reform rabbis. Because we're told they were all tzaddikim, chassidim, v'amolei Torah. So if two had different views, different opinions, if Reuven held one thing and Shimon held another thing, how bad could Shimon's view have been? So it's different to Reuven's. So you agree to differ. You argue it out, you try and persuade each other, you can't persuade each other, you agree to differ, as in the case of Rabbi Akiva ben Mahalalel, and you carry on with the job. That's it. Not with them. They were so firm in their views, they were ikesh, they were so stubborn in their principles, that they were unable to accommodate society. And that's the essence of Yashrus, the ability to steer a straight course in society. And to conclude, the only example I can give you that really illustrates it clearly is that there are really two direction-finding mechanisms. There's a little world that you build for yourself. And inside that little world, you've got to fix your values in terms of Torah. Having done that, you take that little world and you move inside the little world outside. You go outside, it's a little sphere that surrounds you. And inside that sphere, all your decisions are fixed and your values are fixed in terms of Torah. But now you've got to go out. You and your sphere together have to go out. For example, in an aeroplane. I can walk in an aeroplane and I've just got to balance myself in relation to the aeroplane. I don't have to worry what's happening outside. If the aeroplane's banking one way or another, that doesn't affect me inside the aeroplane. I've got a little sealed world which operates on its own. And there I take my values from within that sealed world. But if you're the pilot of the plane and the wind is pushing you one way or another, you've continuously got to adjust this whole world. The whole aeroplane has to be adjusted one way or another, left, right, up, down, so as to continue steering a straight course. And so it is with Torah. One has to choose one's little world and one has to fix one's values in one's little world. And then one takes one's little world and one walks outside. But now the art is to be able to adjust that little world all the time to make sure that it fits in, to make sure that it's acceptable, to make sure that people don't look at it like some crazy flying saucer that's come from somewhere, but that it looks normal, that it fits in, that it's beautiful, that it's attractive, that people see the value of it and the meaning of it, with the result that as consequent from that yashrus, from that straightness, not only is one accepted by society, but mis'ahev shem shemayim al yodecho. As a result of you, people come to love God. And once one is fulfilling that first mitzvah of the Shema, ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, you should cause the Lord your God to be loved.